For the past, let's see, 7, 8 weeks, we've been talking about the arguments for the existence of God. So we've spent a lot of time talking about the proofs of God's existence. We've talked about the origins, the different ideas that humanity has come up with to try to explain the origins of human life. Then we've talked about the existence of God from design. Does anybody remember the name for that? The existence of God for design. The something argument. Something illogical. The teleological argument. Then we talked about the existence of God from cause and effect. Does anybody remember that argument? The cosmological argument. All right. And then we talked about the case for God from morality. And I'm sure there's a big fancy word for that one too, but I can't think of it at the time. But so we've approached apologetics and defending the existence of God from these different ways. And then we've talked about the just focused in on creation versus evolution debate, which is huge. And we've talked about science in general. Remember there was a handout that really a Christian worldview is necessary to even do science. And it's pretty amazing stuff to think about. And just even the scientific method itself, bases, or the foundation of the scientific method, I should say, is founded in a Christian worldview. Meaning the idea of objective truth, the idea of consistency, and there are certain laws in the world and the universe that enables science to even happen. And so just the fact that there is a consistency, that there's a coherency in the world, enables us to study it. If there wasn't this consistency, if gravity was kind of hit and miss, and as I was talking right now, I would start floating in the air, my head would hit the ceiling, and then all of a sudden gravity would kick in, you know, that'd be a horrible existence, you know. And we wouldn't know what gravity was. We would just think, you know, everybody just kind of floats every 2 or 3 seconds. That's just normal. But we realize that, we stick to the ground because of some invisible force. So there are all these consistencies. The seasons change, and you know, the season's changing right now, and it's been changing forever. You know, it's going to get cold, and then guess what's going to happen after that? Come about April or May next year, it's going to start warming up. And so all of these regularities in the universe enable people to do science, at least the natural sciences anyway. And even really, you could probably say all science, any sort of science is based on consistency. So, so before we jump in, I want to talk a little bit more about science. Science as opposed to a scientific worldview. That's kind of what's going to be the subject tonight. But as always, are there any questions over the reading or any questions about what we've talked about, faith and knowledge? We've talked about random chance, or intelligent design. We've talked about teleology, cosmology. We've talked about morality, evolution. Are there any questions concerning any of those things before we get into our subject for tonight? Anyone? Don't be bashful. Going once, going twice. All right. And by the way, We jumped ahead because I was out last week and we're going to have Thanksgiving break. So we're actually starting tonight, or actually starting next week, we're going to be back on schedule for our syllabus. Okay, so if you're wondering where we are in the apologetics class, we're going to end the creation versus evolution discussion tonight. And then we're going to start talking about the Bible. Okay, and I believe that's just the introduction. No, that's not right. We're still a week ahead. So, but we are going to talk about the Bible next week. So we're just 1 week ahead, not two.
Are we on the creation versus evolution?
Right. We're going to finish that whole section, creation versus evolution, tonight. So, did everybody read or get a chance to read the creation versus evolution part two? Part two? We talked about a little bit about evolution as a theory, and the difference of a hypothesis and a theory and a law. And we talked about how it's not really talked about as a theory. It's kind of talked about as fact. It's just unilateral. Nobody ever questions it. And so, but it's a theory, it's a hypothesis, really, that it cannot be tested, so it can't even get to the level of theory. But it is an idea that people have come up with to explain, not necessarily the origins of life, because it can't. They say that it started with a point of singularity. And some would even say spontaneous generation, but we talked about that. That's impossible. Nothing is ever spontaneously generated. And so there are, you know, evolutionists that say, no, it can't explain the origin of life, just the process. Okay, but however you cut it, there are so many holes and so many flaws in evolution. But if you watch any television concerning, you know, a science channel or anything like that, mm-hmm. evolution is never questioned. Mm-hmm. They never question. Right, right. And so in schools, in elementary schools, mm-hmm. high schools, college, it's just accepted as a fact. But if you look into it, it's really not. It's just an idea. All right? Anything in that chapter that you have any questions about? Anything at all? Because I'm going to pass around a picture of something that is just an example of science, so-called science, run amok. Okay, that's what it is. And again, I want to emphasize that science is not bad. Scientific method is not bad. It's a good tool to use. But what is called science today is not true science. Not true, for the most part. There are some great scientists out there. Don't make me mislead you to think that all scientists are, you know, just liars or things like that. No, there are a lot of good scientists. But for the most part, what's on television, what's in the major magazines like National Geographic, things like that, it's not science. It's really marketing. I spent probably 4 hours today researching this thing called Tiktaalik. Has anybody ever heard of Tiktaalik? It was a revolutionary discovery, very recent, within the last 10 years, and it was supposed to be the missing link. You know what I mean by missing link? Evolutionary theory says that, you know, over millions and millions, some, you know, billions of years, whatever, certain animals evolved into, you know, for example, an amphibian into what they call a tetrapod, or a land, something with four legs that walks on the ground. Okay, but problem is there's no fossils. There's no halfways anywhere. You can't find any fossils that prove that. Well, this Tiktaalik is one of those. It was found in Canada, on an island in Canada. And Tiktaalik is a native word that means, I think it means fish, I think, or something like that. So anyway, it was like that. It's the newest big thing to prove evolution. This guy, I believe his name is Neil Shubin. I think it's Neil Shubin. That was his last name, Shubin. He's a scientist in Chicago. And he discovered this with a team of his, and so I was watching videos, researching it, and so I thought, you know, this is a great example of so-called science just kind of gone crazy, all right? And so let me kind of introduce you to Tiktaalik, all right? Here, I'll start here, just pass it around. This is what was discovered. Pass it around, and because this is what is discovered, and I'll tell you what the conclusion was based on this discovery. Neil Shubin went to Canada. He said he'd been searching for 20 years for a missing link, and they spent 6 years studying in Canada. And this is all of his own admission, and by the way, I'm not discrediting his character. I have no idea about the man. I'm just telling you exactly what he said on his videos that he's posted, okay, that they were studying for 6 years in Canada, and they had not found a thing in 6 years. And so, quote, they're running out of time and running out of money. Okay, it was the last day, maybe last week or so, of the dig. So, in other words, this was his last chance to find something. Okay. He shouldn't have admitted that, by the way, because I'm immediately thinking, I wouldn't have put that in there. But anyway, and so they find this snout sticking out of the edge of the rock. They begin to dig it, and the snout gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And they find this thing that obviously looks like a fish, but upon further investigation, they say, wow, this is something else. Okay, and so I'll pass this around. Based on that,
this is what they concluded.
Complete with full color illustration, timetable. It has the different phases of this animal's life based on this finding. Now, this is the only one they found. This is the only one they found in 6 years, all right, of digging. And they've never found anything like it before. But based on this evidence, they've already determined when it was alive, what it looked like, what it ate, what color it was, how big it was, its neighbor's fry, shoe size, and everything else. Now, that's a little exaggeration. But here, this is just when you research. If I was a high school kid, you know, researching tectonics, this is the kind of stuff I'd come up with. It's absolutely convincing because there's so much information. They even have a photograph. That's a completely digitized example. That's not a real animal. That's Tiktaalik, given flesh and skin. They even have a full life-size picture of it. They have displays of it in museums of great detail. Okay, and they said this is the missing link. Just another, you know, proof of evolutionary process in action, you know. Okay. And I dug and I dug and I dug and I was thinking, there has to be more than this. There has to be more information to base all of these conclusions. There has to be more evidence. They must have found a dozen of these things. There must have been, you know, 100 more lying around that they concluded all this stuff. There must have been more of this one that they found. No, that's it. What you see is what you get. So they found a fish fossil in the ground that had characteristics that were unusual, and they based an entire species. They founded entire species based on this this finding. But something was interesting also on this finding. Not only was it the last day, not only was it the last penny, because by the way, he's not using his own money. Okay, his job is on the line. Okay. His career, his employer was funding this. So imagine if you funded somebody to go dig for 6 years and they came back with nothing. Think you'd have a job? Now I'm not questioning his morals. It just looks kind of fishy. Wow, that's a good pun. I didn't even realize that. That's good. Okay. Thank you, Lord. All right. But upon this finding, he brings back home and wins numerous prestigious awards. He is cited on major television networks. He's all in the news, all on the internet. He writes several articles, has several books published. PBS has even syndicated a series based off this entitled Finding Your Inner Fish. All right? So he has a science show for children that's all about this kind of stuff. And in other words, he's famous. And he's probably gained a penny or two off of this thing.
Salamander.
Yeah. So I began researching this. You know, there's always folks trying to, Christian people trying to debunk this kind of stuff because it's just a stretch. If that's all you have, science doesn't fill in the gaps. Okay? Science says this is what we found, this is what we think it is. That's not science. That is, we found this, and if we don't come home and make this something, we're all out of a job, is the way I interpreted it. So anyway, I could be wrong, but just seems that way for me. But as much as I've researched it, there's no more information to be found on Tiktaalik. This is it. So we have to be careful when we read things, when we watch things on television or the internet, that just because a person has a degree, 2 or 3 degrees, 5 or 6 degrees, just because they're a professional and they have all sorts of accolades, doesn't necessarily mean that they can't make mistakes. The evidence is evidence. I mean, if I found that in digging around, I would say I have no idea what this is. It's obviously some kind of fish, but evidently you can go to school and you can kind of peer back into the past and figure out the times and dates of when all of these things live. So now that you've seen that, let me pass you something else and see what you think about it. I won't say anything about this. I'm just going to let it go around, okay? And Because it kind of makes you laugh at first. Right? What do you think that is? What is that called? It's a mermaid, right? Or it might be a merman. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know mermaid anatomy very well.
Well, it's missing some parts.
Is it missing some parts? Okay. All right. Theoretically, that has just as much justification as tectolic.
Oh, much, much more.
I mean, that's more evidence there because there's more involved. That's a full skeleton, right? It's all there. But I just wanted to put it in perspective. It's kind of silly. But we have to remember, for the most part, not everybody, but for the most part, like the book that I mentioned, Thomas Kuhn wrote a book highlighting the fact that scientists, their jobs are on the line for the most part, a lot of times. And it's usually the younger scientists that are making true discoveries and revolutionizing the field, because the older guys that have been in it for a long time have made a name for themselves, and they dare not find out that they're wrong, or the young guy's going to take their job. So human nature kind of kicks in, fallen human nature kind of kicks in the scientific process. And I believe it kind of blinds scientists, well-meaning scientists, it kind of blinds them to the facts. And because by his own admission, I watched two different interviews with him, and he mentioned it twice. That, you know, this was the last day, this was the last penny, you know, we were about to go home without anything. And I was just thinking, why is that such a big deal to him? And because I know why it's a big deal. Because he had been given, entrusted with thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of somebody else's money, and was about to come home empty-handed. But another thing is, my guess is he probably wanted to, come home with people being proud of him. You know, he's kind of carrying the banner for his colleagues and for the college in which he is employed. Now, that's not science, okay? Science would have found that and said, okay, let's try to come up with some conclusions or some hypotheses, all right? That paper that has all of the information, the years of when it was alive, the color and all of those things, that's not given in the form of a hypothesis. There's no theorizing there. That's all given as fact. And everything that I read on Tiktaalik, none of it was saying that this is a possible thing. This is the what it was. This is the way it was, and this is what's happened. All right. So when we think about science and we read about things of science, we have to keep that in mind. Now, another thing I want to talk about, though, as it's different. There is science, just real science, but then there's a scientific worldview. Okay, a scientific worldview is drastically different. As I was also studying Tiktaalik and watching interviews of Neil Shubin, another thing that came out was what he said is that they went out in search of this missing link. Okay. In other words, they went looking for something based on presuppositions that they already had. They went into their science realizing already negating some things and accepting others. So regardless of what they found, whatever it was had to fall into their paradigm in which they've already created for themselves. So they went looking for a missing link, realizing that if they find something that wasn't it, then or something that discredited their theory, that they just automatically threw it away. Okay, it just doesn't fit. That's not science either. Okay, that's not science. That's not dealing honestly with the evidence. It's not science. That is somebody trying to keep a job, is what that is. That's what just kept coming out. Say it again, Ron.
It's a charlatan.
Yes. So, but all due respect, though, we have to be careful also, you know, as Bible students, because that same principle is not just for scientists. It's just part of human nature. We kind of look for what we want to find a lot of times. And we can do that with the Bible if we're not careful. Okay, just as an aside. I think it's impossible to be purely objective. But I think, especially Christians, we have the upper hand because we have God on our side. And we say, Lord, I want to see this the right way. Whether you're studying the Bible, whether you're studying paleontology, archaeology, whatever. In any pursuit of knowledge, as a Christian. We go in understanding certain things are so, but we understand human nature differently than everyone else. That's what a scientific worldview lacks. Scientific worldview says that humanity, humans, have the capability within and of themselves to discover truth and kind of define truth. So, for example, for evolution, they have come up with an idea and they've developed a whole system of ideas to establish what they believe is true. And so he went out based on his truth that he has defined himself based on human knowledge and human understanding. He went out to find and establish his own truth. That again is not a proper way to attain any sort of knowledge. Okay, knowledge is based on facts and information that is brought together and analyzed and everything else. But it's not based on something that you're already going out to look for. That is just kind of defining your own truth. But a scientific worldview is, I think, one of the saddest and most hopeless of all worldviews. It's similar to a humanist worldview. Humanism says that man is the measure of all things, and if man hasn't figured it out, then it's just not there. It places humanity, obviously it's not compatible with a Christian worldview. Humanism places humans on the highest level of authority for everything. Morality, decency, goodness, truth, everything. So man can change it because man is changeable. Man's morality, man's truth changes from generation to generation. There is no standard. But think about the implications. Humanistic, or you call it naturalistic, scientific worldview says that there is nothing outside the natural world. There is nothing outside the things that we can see. That would include the universe. There's nothing outside. So there's no room for God. The God and the supernatural, demons and spirits and all that kind of stuff, just not a chance. Just not exist. They can't find it. Nobody can study it. You can't put it under a microscope, so they just discredit it. But here's the problem. Science, the scientific worldview, if it can't even be called a worldview, because normally a worldview, it has some sort of, it answers life's biggest questions. Where did we come from? Why are we here? Where are we going? Okay, and what is my purpose in life? Worldviews normally try to answer those questions. But science says there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a meaning or a purpose, because we just happened. We are just random chance accidents. So since that's the case, then there's no purpose. And if there's no purpose, there's no meaning. And where we're going is nowhere. That we're just here and we die, just like any other animal, right? Because we just all evolved from a single cell organism into this vast expanse that we call Earth, and we have all of this complex world that we live in from this one point of singularity. You know, we're just common ancestors of dirt and, you know, dogs and pigs and flies and fish. And so we live here and we do the best we can and have fun while we can, but it's all hopeless and meaningless. This is why scientific worldview it doesn't work. And this is why that those who hold to a scientific worldview are very depressed people. Because there's no meaning. There's no reason why you're there. It gives no basis. There's no overarching story or narrative by which to base your life. It's just, you're just here. So when I read things about Neil Shubin and other scientists, Richard Dawkins, and all of the atheists, when they combat Christians with their worldviews and their lack of knowledge and all of these sorts of things, it's really sad. Because by their own admission, they realize that life is meaningless and there's really no point. But they say that just to prove the Christians wrong, but in proving us wrong, it's really proving us right, because it points out of how sad of an existence it is without realizing the facts, realizing the truth. Because as we've seen, real science would observe the natural order and realize that at the very least, there has to be something beyond this. That's why scientists up until probably the 15th century, okay, I would say 99% of them were Christians. They were Christians. Because like I said a couple of weeks ago, it takes a Christian worldview really to do science the right way. To look at the evidence, realizing that, hey, this is what I found, this is my idea, but you know what, I could be wrong. That's what's missing in a lot of science today. Nobody's willing to say, this is what I think. And I read another article today, I read about 50 of them, but I was reading one, and it was from a journalist who interviews scientists, okay? And he was lamenting the fact that there are no science, I don't know if they're called scientific journalists or something like that, but they're journalists who, you know, they interview people like Neil Shubin. And he says there's nobody out there with any guts. There's nobody out there that wants to ask the real questions. And he was saying that as a journalist, for the most part, if you're asking scientists, some about his new discovery, and they say, this is what I think, he says now, journalists will just immediately turn it off and say, okay, thank you, never mind, I'll go find somebody else. Because the journalist knows if he brings back to his editor, when the scientist thinks that this is what it is, the editor can say, nobody cares what he thinks is going to happen. People want to know stuff. They want to know that it is or it isn't, because that's what sells. So it's not just the scientists, it's the journalists, it's the editors. There's a whole train of deception that is under this big umbrella called so-called science. This particular journalist was, I almost printed this article that he wrote out because it was really good. He was not a Christian by far, but he was telling the truth. He was telling the truth that people in general have to be aware that when they receive information that is, you know, wearing the garb of science, we need to train ourselves to ask the right questions. Where is the evidence for that? There has to be more, because if I showed you, I mean, if you were to see that picture and it had some sort of label underneath to it, newest scientific discovery, Tiktaalik, the missing link of the evolutionary theory, this proves it, and it has, you know, from the Discovery Channel, National Geographic, has some sort of scientist giving all of this information about it, most people, the majority of people are just going to say, well, that's got to be true. Who am I? I'm just a nobody. I don't know anything about science. I don't know anything about paleontology or archaeology. I can't argue with these people. This is kind of the world we live in now. We've kind of duped ourselves into thinking that, you know, only trained professionals have the ability to, you know, question things like that. And I've heard scientists even write articles about people who they just bash them and say, these people, they haven't spent any time, they haven't spent the hours, they don't have the degrees, they don't know what we know, they don't know how to do this stuff. But really, it's common sense. It's common sense. If you find a fossil in the ground, you're already limited to your conclusions. But whatever you find, it is still a guess. It is still a guess. The science at its best can just give us some good ideas, you know, at least archaeology anyway. So we have to be careful in putting all of our chips in, you know, the basket of scientists, because they are humans just like we are. And Christian theology says because they're humans with a natural bent towards their own self-glorification, we have to be careful of that in which we read. Does that make sense? What do y'all think about the mermaid? They found that, you know, Lake Tuwakuna. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing stuff. You know, it was in a book, so it had to be written.
One of the sentence last year.
Say it again.
I got hooked in one last year.
Listen, there are a ton of discoveries. There's a ton of information. There are a ton of museums. We went near Branson, I think it was called Ridgedale, I think that the place was, and they had a museum. We were in the Ozark Mountains, and they had a museum of natural history, and it was history of the Ozark Mountains, and they had all of these different displays, full-size, life-size, stuffed animals that used to walk, you know, roam around the Ozark Mountains. And I was in this museum, which was supposed to be a place of, you know, higher learning, education, things like that. But all it was a display with a little, you know, 8x11, 8.5x11, you know, card that had the name, when it was alive, and you know, what it ate and stuff like that. And that was it. It doesn't have, this is the bones we discovered. You know, this is what, you know, comparing other, you know, species we found, or nothing like that. It was just a display. They had no evidence that this animal ever actually existed. They just said, all right, you know, but all, it was a show. It was a show. We paid our money to go learn something, and we just paid our money for a show. We might as well just turn on and watch Jurassic Park. We probably learn the same amount of information. Because it's really not science. It's science. The mighty dollar has crept into every area of education. And we have to be aware of that if we're going to do any type of learning. And that, I hate to say it, but it even includes Christianity, theology. Okay, the mighty dollar, because I've been in school for a long time, and I've been around many professors, I've read many articles, and I've heard a lot of things. It's everywhere. It is everywhere. And there are professors who will go to the grave in something that they hold to be true just so they don't have to be wrong. They just don't have to be wrong. But as Christian students, students of anything, if we are going to be in the pursuit of knowledge, and the Scripture says that, to gain wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, not only of God, but of life, to be wise. To be wise, biblically speaking, means to know about life. I think one scholar kind of defines wisdom as skill in living. It's the ability to live well. But it also, that implies thinking well. So everything we read, everything we watch, what we listen to, the people we talk to, we don't have to be skeptic. We don't have to be negative and always, you know, doubting everything everybody says. But just be honest. Just be honest with ourselves, be honest with the people, the things we're reading, and saying, that's an interesting idea, but there has to be more. There's got to be more evidence.
There's like, Romans talks about professing themselves to be wise and became fools, and there's such a blindness that comes with arrogance.
Yeah.
When you work with people that are very brilliant and have a lot of degrees, they can become so blind because of their own arrogance that they cannot be wrong. You know, I work with doctors, cardiologists that are, they're brilliant, but they can't be wrong.
Exactly.
You know, especially when you're going to work on somebody's, you know, heart, you better not be wrong.
So,
but that same arrogance, it really does bring blindness.
Yeah, and that's universal. That's for everybody, Christian, non-Christian alike. Mm-hmm. So we just, and it's something we have to fight. I mean, it happens to the best of us, even, you know, good pastors and teachers and biblical scholars, great scientists. And I mean, and I've been throwing Mr. Shubin under the bus all night, but I just, and I don't know him personally, but I can see how easy it would be to kind of be deceived in all of this when you're thinking, I don't want to go home empty-handed, but I can go home with a book deal, a television show, articles, and all of these other things. It's kind of appealing, isn't it? And you know, and he could play innocent and say, you know, I'm just giving you the facts. You know, this is just what we found. You know, but really, you just found a fossil. Here's one interesting thing: as I was trying to read stuff on both sides. I was reading, you know, all the stuff about, you know, pro-evolutionary scientists that are, you know, praising this tectonic discovery, and then I started reading things about people who are trying to bust it. And a guy, if you look at the picture, it's got a flat head, right? Looks kind of like an alligator or something like that, or a salamander. This one guy, I don't know if he's a Christian or not, but he was writing about it. He was doing real science. He said, okay, since that is their hypothesis, let's test it. They say this is an animal that, you know, supposedly because of the flat head with the eyes on top, it must be some sort of, you know, tetrapod because, you know, like alligators, they have four legs, eyes on top. So he's saying, you know, let's test it. Let's see if there's any other possibility in the shape of this animal. So you know what he did? He took a drum. You know what a drum fish is? He took a drum, cut its head off, put it on a cinder block, packed dirt around it. He put more dirt on top of it, put another cinder block on top of it with vice grips all the way around it. And he wanted to test to see whether if a regular, you know, flat a fish head that is up and down like this with eyes on the side, if you squish it, if you put enough pressure on the top, would it flat out perfectly? So he put it in there, packed the dirt around it, put it in two cinder blocks. He's trying to imitate, because in Canada there's layers and layers of flat rock. Okay, so this fish looks like it was just squished. So he said, let's try to imitate the best we can. And he did it. And he pulled the fish out. It was perfect. It looked exactly like tectonic. I mean, the eyes were on top. And when he picked it up, it looked exactly like this salamander head. So it's a hypothesis, but you have one test that says, well, here's another option. A fish could have got squished. It just could have got squished. And it's, you know, that's at least a possibility. But did Mr. Shubin bring up that possibility? No. But here was another one. Because Mr. Shubin says, well, you know, not only the flat head, but it has these bones. You know, fish have fins. He says it has a bone here and a bone here and then a joint here, you know, like we do. He says, you know, this is obviously something that was walking on land. And so I read another article that this guy, you know, he would give the evidence that Shubin had, you know, the head and the neck and the legs. And then after each one, he was showing living animals now that fish that have these same characteristics. That there are actually fish that have hands and arms. So this is not so extraordinary, okay? That there are all kinds of crazy looking animals out there that the most of us don't know about. That the majority of the public is not aware of. Scientists know this, I think. They know this, okay? But if you do your research, you're going to find out, well, there are some other fish that you know, have these sort of leg-like things. I mean, there are fish that fly. There's a flying fish. That's a pretty amazing thing. But
like that fisherman that goes out, the monster fish, that he goes and right. All over the world and shows you these ugly-looking things.
I mean, the point is, I mean, if you find something that is unusual, you don't base an entire species, let alone try to establish your presuppositions about life and the origin of life and the process of life and how we got here based on, I mean, if we do that in normal life, it would be ridiculous, right? Imagine going up to the red light. It's green when you're getting there, okay? It turns yellow. And you're looking and say, you know what? It's done this every single time. This thing might stay green. It might turn green after yellow. So you speed up thinking, you know what? It's kind of unusual, but I'm going to bet on it that this is going to turn green. It's ridiculous, isn't it? So why, if we found thousands and thousands of fossils that are similar, and then we find one that's different, why would we bank on the one that's different and say, ha-ha, here it is. Here's the missing link. Maybe you just found something you never found before. Ha-ha, you know. Just maybe, you know, I would imagine if they kept digging, there's probably other things that would help substantiate their find. That's true science. True science is good. It's a good thing. It's our friend. But the fallacies of what could be called pseudoscience, fake science, is universal, and we have to be just as careful as Christians when we study anything, even our Bibles. Because we have our own biases. We like to find things in the Bible that might not be there, and we like to defend them to our own harm and to the harm of others if we're not careful. But scientific worldview leads to hopelessness, and they will accept that, right? Just so they will not have to be proven wrong. But we know why, for the most part, there's a theological reason why many so-called scientists refuse to accept the truth. Remember we talked about in Romans, when we talk about the many faces and objections of truth or faith, I mean, and how there are humanity's heart's bad. The human heart is fallen and decayed. And man would rather bet his life on nothing and live a hopeless existence than acknowledge God as Creator. Mm-hmm. I mean, just learning all about this stuff and science, behind the scenes kind of science stuff, really just proves the Christian doctrine of depravity. Mm-hmm. Why, if we are, as the evolutionist says, if we are at the top of the food chain and we've kind of figured it out better than anything else, why do we constantly push ourselves into a hole? Why do we constantly ruin ourselves? One picture I saw, it was a cartoon based on Tiktaalik, and it showed, it was a beachfront, and it showed Tiktaalik, one cartoon character of Tiktaalik, you know, halfway in, halfway out of the water. Then it showed him again, you know, completely out of the water, and it showed him again, he's making this circle like this. And each time he's, you know, an evolutionary process, he's developing more, and as he's getting along, he's standing upright. And if when he gets all the way back close to the bank again, or close to the edge of the water, he's a full man. Okay, because you know, Shubin says, this is our ancestor. So we've developed from this. And we started out as a fish. We grew legs. Then we stood upright and all of this other stuff. But the cartoon was pretty hilarious because at the end product, like from tectonic, quadruped, or a tetrapod, standing upright, full-fledged man, you know what the last guy was doing? Making the circle back into the water? He had a trash can full of junk and garbage, dumping it into the sea. You get the picture? Natural selection says, you know, we just, you know, we get better and better and better and better and better, but really, we're not getting better and better. If natural selection is true, and survival of the fittest was true, why is it that we constantly destroy ourselves? As we develop, and as we progress, we really do more harm than good. You say, well, our life expectancy is so much better, but yeah, living's not any better. We might live longer, but we're not living better. There's a difference. Our age is getting farther, but our humanness, our morality, our decency, what really makes us human is degrading. We're getting farther and farther the other way, right? It just doesn't work. Evolution just doesn't work on all sorts of fronts. So when we think about the existence of God and origins, evolution is like the big kid on the block. If you're not a creationist, you're pretty much an evolutionist. And I'm hoping that the last 7 or 8 weeks, there's so many different approaches to discuss with an evolutionist about other options. Not one of them. Teleological argument is not the only one. Cosmological argument. They're not designed to be, you know, the 1-2 punch, you know, to prove the atheist wrong or whatever. But all of this together is just a wealth of information to hopefully overwhelm anyone to say, how can you deny that? How can you deny all of this? Right? And they said, well, we found tectonic. How can you deny that? Right? There's a lot more evidence on our side than there is theirs. All right? And so we don't base our faith on the existence of God merely on just a story. Right? Because that's what a lot of atheists say. You bet your life on that book. How do you know the book's true? Well, we're going to get to that in the next several weeks. But it's not just the book. Even if we didn't have the book, we just had brains. It would lead us to the conclusion that there's a God in heaven that created the world. That's why from the beginning of time until just very recently, probably the last 200 years, did anyone really ever question that? Nobody ever questioned the fact that there's a creator, right? I mean, for the most part. Just in the last couple hundred years has that been challenged. And it's just kind of gone to the extreme now, where now people are even questioning if there's a creator. It's kind of the opposite now. But why is that? That's a very fascinating question to me. And hopefully next semester in a faith and culture class, I want to develop that a little bit more. Why is it that in the last 200 years there's been more ideological changes, more worldview changes, more idea shifts, big stories that revolutionize the way humans think of themselves? Just in the last 200 years, all of that has shifted. I mean, times and times more than in the last however old you think the Earth is. All right, I'm going to say 10,000 years. All right. In the last 10,000 years of human history, more change has taken place in human thinking in the 200 years than 10,000. That's pretty fascinating. And I think that's something worth exploring.